Hello, and welcome to this podcast developed by PER, focusing on HER2 mutant NSCLC, a rare and challenging subset of lung cancer. In this episode, Dr. Millie Das from Stanford/VA Palo Alto and Dr. Eric Kumar Singhi from MD Anderson discuss emerging data on next-generation HER2 selective tyrosine kinase inhibitors in this setting. This activity is provided by PER and supported by educational grants from AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Inc., Catalyst Pharmaceuticals, Inc., Daiichi Sankyo, Inc., Exact Sciences Corporation, Janssen Biotech, Inc., and Partner Therapeutics.
Today we're going to be discussing breaking barriers in HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer, exploring the promise of next generation TKIs. My name is Millie Das. I'm a thoracic medical oncologist at Stanford University, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Dr. Eric Singhi. Eric, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Millie, for having me. My name is Eric Singhi. I'm a thoracic medical oncologist, assistant professor at MD Anderson Cancer Center. Really excited to be here and unpack all the exciting data that we have for patients.
All right. So we're going to just start with talking about what makes HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer a particularly challenging subtype to treat. So Eric, what are your thoughts? We see these patients in our clinic. What do you think is particularly challenging about these particular patients?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question. It's a very loaded question, if you will, because when I think about these patients, I think the challenge even starts in this particular disease space at time of diagnosis. So making sure patients get the right biomarker testing, they have access to that testing. And not only that, but we make sure that we appropriately interpret the information. Some of the nomenclature around the HER2 space gets confusing, right? We've got ERBB2, we have HER2, we use them interchangeably. ERBB2, of course, is the gene name, HER2 is the protein name. And then they both refer to the same tyrosine kinase receptor, but just a lot of confusion trying to figure it out. So I think even from the beginning, just clarifying the diagnosis and making sure biomarker testing is done is really important and presents a challenge. And then, of course, this type of disease tends to affect more frequently a subset, very distinct patient demographics. So these are patients who are typically without a smoking history. They're women, very similar to some of the oncogene-driven lung cancers that we also know about, like EGFR and ALK. But it's a unique demographic profile that not everyone knows about. So I think continuing to raise awareness that all you need to be at risk for lung cancer is to have lungs is huge, particularly even in this space. Other things about this disease, particularly, is it has a high incidence of brain metastases. Oftentimes, we'll find patients at time of diagnosis, unfortunately, with metastatic intracranial disease. That obviously warrants more of a holistic workup and making sure that we're really taking care of their quality of life while trying to initiate a systemic therapy. And then finally, historically, we don't really have many targeted therapies up until now, up until recently in this space. And so there's been a lot of what I call FOMO, that feeling of missing out for these patients who have this driver alteration, but we haven't been able to as liberally give a meaningful, safe, targeted therapy for them.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think when we see these patients, again, it's a similar patient demographic to our EGFR and ALK patients, for which we do have frontline TKI treatment options, targeted TKI treatment options. And I think when we see these patients with HER2, we don't have those approvals yet. We know, of course, the incidence is much lower for HER2 mutations in non-small cell lung cancer. Incidence is only 2-3%. And when we see these patients, we don't necessarily have that option of an oral targeted treatment up front. That may change over the years, hopefully, but still to this day, I think this is one of the struggles when we see these patients. Next, Eric, can you walk us through the current treatment landscape for HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer? We just talked about how we don't currently have any first-line targeted therapies available for these patients that are currently FDA approved. But when you see a patient in your clinic, what are the treatment options that you're discussing with them?
Yeah, so currently what we have approved for patients outside of clinical trials, of course, is platinum-based chemotherapy. That's really our staple for patients in the frontline setting, patients who have not yet had a treatment against their non-small cell lung cancer with or without immunotherapy. Sometimes I'm also considering the addition of bevacizumab as well when I'm thinking about what to give my patients. Immunotherapy alone, though, does not seem to have robust efficacy in this patient population, so I think that's really important. Of course, we have been hinting that the current treatment landscape is rapidly evolving for patients, which brings a lot of excitement So for patients that have unfortunately experienced disease progression on platinum-based chemotherapy, and we're trying to think about options that are approved for patients, we are able to now offer a more targeted therapy with an antibody drug conjugate, trastuzumab deruxtecan, which has been around and approved for patients. That's based on data from the DESTINY-Lung01 study, showed about an objective response rate of 55%. Also some hint at intracranial efficacy for patients too, which is exciting to be able to tell patients. But that's currently what we have available.
Yes, and what do you think are the most pressing unmet needs for this patient population today? I mean, obviously, we talked about not really having an FDA-approved frontline targeted treatment option. What are some of the other sort of unmet needs?
Yeah, I'll go back to just even the beginning of diagnosis, Millie. I think, making sure we identify the target, making sure that we understand the results of biomarker testing as well, so patients have access to the appropriate therapy, have access to a discussion about clinical trials is huge. So yeah, optimizing biomarker testing is really big. And then, of course, having new drug development that is highly selective against this target, but still has a favorable safety profile is huge. So we have seen and witnessed sort of this development of drugs in this space, but they've been really tough to be able to tolerate from a patient standpoint. And so making sure that not only does it provide efficacy against the target, but it's easy to be able to take the drug routinely, have manageable side effects, that's huge. And then the other big unmet need, of course, is unfortunately a lot of these patients will experience intracranial metastatic disease at some point during their cancer care journey. So up to 30 to even 50% of these patients will have intracranial disease progression, during their cancer care journey. And so it's really important to make sure that when we're developing these drugs, we have brain penetrant HER2 drugs available for them.
I completely agree with you. I've personally had a number of these HER2 mutant patients who end up develop either having brain metastases at the time of diagnosis or developing significant brain metastases or even leptomeningeal disease, and how really that ends up being the biggest challenge for those patients. And so yes, I agree with all your sentiments. So next, we're going to go on to talk about some of the current HER2 TKIs that are in development for non-small cell lung cancer, including poziotinib, piratinib, zongertinib, sevabertinib, and NVL-330. And so I'm just going to ask you, Eric, if we can maybe go through each of these and talk about their mechanism of action, HER2 specificity, and whether or not these drugs are EGFR sparing. And I'll just have you kind of go through them one by one, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course, Millie. I'm happy to. I'm really excited about the clinical development that we have for patients in this space. We've been waiting for a while to see more and more of these oral small molecule tyrosine kinase inhibitors, TKIs, being developed with clinical efficacy and HER2 specificity. And I can, happily say that it's coming. Finally, we're seeing that light at the end of the tunnel, if you will. And so, yeah, several of these HER2 TKIs are in development for non-small cell lung cancer. You've mentioned several of them. And I think really where they differ is in terms of HER2 specificity, EGFR sparing, and then their clinical activity. So we can jump into a little bit about the mechanism of action for each of these. So poziotinib, piratinib, these are ones that have been a little bit more historical, if you will, and they are pan-HER TKIs. So they're going to inhibit both HER2 and EGFR. And as a result, it can lead to significant EGFR-related toxicities, so diarrhea, rash. And if you look at historically what the objective response rates have been, they've been just upwards or close to 30% for these drugs, respectively, in the HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer space. But they've come with a price, and that price is toxicity. So they've had high grades of grade 3 and higher diarrhea for piratinib. And then for rash, we really saw high grades of that with poziotinib. Up to 49% of patients had grade 3 or higher rash, which is quite significant. And again, really, it's because they have not spared that EGFR pathway, if you will, and that's limited tolerability. So those are the historical drugs that we've seen. Fast forward to what we're seeing now, what's on the way, hopefully, for our patients in clinic. We have zongertinib. Zongertinib is a next-generation oral irreversible TKI, and it's meant to selectively inhibit the HER2 pathway while sparing that wild-type EGFR. So as a result, we're supposed to see reduced EGFR-related adverse events, which is exciting to be able to tell patients. And then we have the BA88 drug, which is now called sevabertinib. This is an oral reversible TKI. And what it does is it can inhibit mutant HER2 and mutant EGFR, but it has a lower affinity for wild type EGFR. And so the goal again is to reduce those EGFR related toxicities compared to some of those earlier pan HER TKIs. So again, yeah, really just trying to become more selective against the HER2 target to spare the wild type EGFR to reduce those toxicities for patients. I think that's where the main mechanism of action differences are for these targets and these drugs.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's really the goal. I certainly had seen patients who were some of the HER2 patients who I was treating previously who were on the earlier clinical trials with poziotinib and pirotinib, and seeing how challenging it was for them to experience those mostly EGFR side effects, the diarrhea and the rash and the GI toxicity. It was really, really tough. And so it is nice to see these newer generation HER2 selective TKIs that I think are better tolerated. We also have another drug, the NVL-330 drug, which, so far, I think it's obviously still being explored in clinical trials, but so far we are seeing, I think, good potential CNS penetrations, good CNS penetration in some patients, and I think some hopefully exciting data that will lead to larger phase studies. So getting back to some of the HER2 targeted TKIs that we've been talking about, what do some of these newer agents, what does the clinical trial data from some of these newer agents tell us so far in terms of efficacy and safety profiles?
Yeah, Millie, I'll start first with some of the data that we heard about from zongertinib. As a reminder, zongertinib is that next generation oral irreversible TKI. It's meant to selectively inhibit HER2. So we heard from Dr. John Heymach and colleagues at AACR this year, primary analysis of zongertinib in previously treated patients with tumors that harbor a mutation specific to the TKD tyrosine kinase domain of HER2. And so what we saw was that for 75 patients who were previously treated and they had a HER2 mutation in the TKD, and they got zongertinib at a dose of 120 milligrams. 71% of those patients had a confirmed objective response, which was really impressive. Median duration of response was over 14 months. Median progression-free survival was 12.4 months. I was really excited to see that. And I was excited to also see that the objective response from an intracranial standpoint for patients that had brain metastases was 42%. So we are seeing that signal of intracranial efficacy with zongertinib, which is exciting to be able to tell patients and hopefully offer that promise. When we look at another drug, and we're looking at the sevabertinib, previously called BAY88, we saw that at ASCO 2025 this year, we had updates from two different cohorts. Cohort D, which was a cohort that was naive to HER2 targeted therapies, and then cohort F, which was naive to systemic therapy in general. Very small numbers, very minimal follow-up, but we got to see a sneak peek at some of the data, if you will. And in both of those cohorts, we saw an objective response rate of 60%. So it's really nice to be able to say, even if we start earlier, even if we save the drug for a later line of therapy, which many of our patients will currently have access to, we're seeing objective response rates of 60%, which is nice. Of course, these response rates do come with potential adverse events that we need to keep in mind. So going back to zongertinib, grade three or higher drug-related adverse events occurred in about 17% of patients. Most common was increase in ALT, increase in ALT, those liver enzymes. And then for sevabertinib or BAY88, we did see treatment-related grade three diarrhea for patients that were previously treated but naive to HER2 targeted therapy. A grade three and higher was almost a quarter of patients, and so really have to remember that toxicity of diarrhea for patients with that drug.
Absolutely. And I think, though you point out the toxicities, I mean, I'm really encouraged, especially in comparison to those earlier HER2 TKIs that we were talking about, the pirotinib and poziotinib. We're seeing, more than doubling of response rate with the zongertinib and sevabertinib, and also the toxicity, though there's still some there, it's much better than the earlier generation HER2 targeted TKI. So I think, we'll continue to hear more as there are ongoing clinical trials with these newer agents, but I think I'm quite encouraged. Finally, I just wanted to touch a little bit upon the CNS activity. We've been talking about this being really an important unmet need in these patients who have HER2 positive disease. Are any of these agents demonstrating meaningful brain activity in terms of intracranial response rates?
Yeah, so what we know so far is with zongertinib, that has about a 42% confirmed intracranial objective response rate. That was an update that we got right after AACR. So that's nice to be able to tell patients. But also, what I'm excited about, what I'm encouraged about, is data from the Nuvalent 330 drug, NVL-330. Preclinical CNS penetration data seems to suggest superiority over the ADC that we have, trastuzumab deruxtecan, and maybe even some of the other oral TKIs in this space. We'll have to wait to see. It's very, very early data, but any signal of hope for patients with intracranial disease in this space is exciting to be able to talk about.
I agree, and I think it's really important that we try to capture that data from these ongoing trials as we continue to move forward. Now we're going to talk about the clinical role for these HER2-targeted TKIs. So, Eric, I know this is a tough one, but I just, now that we've talked about some of the data and some of the newer TKIs, how do you think we're going to sequence or position these drugs in the current treatment algorithm for our patients with HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer?
Yeah, Millie, I'm excited to answer this question, but I also want to bounce it back to you after I give you my initial thoughts. My thoughts are you want to bring your targeted therapy upfront. We know that we have an attrition of patients as they continue to go through their cancer care journey of being able to have access, meaningful access, and tolerability to subsequent lines of therapy. And so I really feel like we need to have our best drugs upfront in the frontline setting. So I would advocate to have our targeted therapies like our ADCs or like our oral small molecule TKIs in the first line setting, maybe even our oral small molecule TKIs first, to be honest. That opportunity to offer an oral drug that has good efficacy, that's showing us a promising signal of intracranial efficacy and protection as well too. And it lowers that time toxicity as well of patients, having to go in for traditional infusions, going back and forth between a cancer center and their home, and hopefully preserving their quality of life, right? So they can continue to do the things that they enjoy with their loved ones. So that's what I would advocate for. But Millie, what do you think?
I agree. I mean, I have been eagerly awaiting a first line, oral targeted option for these patients, similar to what we have for our EGFR and ALK patients. And so I think this is long overdue, and I'm excited to see some of the ongoing trials that are looking at this in the first line setting, even with the approval. The current approval of trastuzumab deruxtecan, technically it's a second line approval, but if I have the information, if I have a HER2 positive patient that I'm seeing in clinic, it is, and I have the trastuzumab deruxtecan as an option, I will talk about that as a frontline option. Again, sort of, not going directly by the label, but I am a firm believer that we should be offering the targeted therapies to patients as early on in their treatment course as possible. And I really do think that the ongoing studies are going to help us to get there. And then, we talked a little earlier about some of the toxicities with these drugs, and I think it's encouraging that the toxicity profiles for the newer generation HER2 targeted TKIs are looking better than the earlier generation. But, I guess a lot of these patients are going to be treated in the community. And what can we tell our community oncologists about some of the toxicity profiles of some of these drugs and the way to practically manage the side effects of these HER2 targeted TKIs?
Yeah, I think education is everything for providers, for patients, making sure people really know what they're signing up for, making sure that's not only the physicians that are aware of the potential side effects, because the first line of call for a lot of patients is actually the nurses, right, or the medical assistants. So just making sure the team is aware of potential side effects is huge. So we mentioned this earlier with sevabertinib, the diarrhea rates, right? That's something to really pay attention to. So as a reminder from the data that we have so far, we're seeing grade 3 and higher diarrhea, which is 7 or more bowel movements above a patient's baseline, right? So that's really important to think about. But we're seeing that in a quarter of patients who are getting that drug currently. So it's going to be very meaningful to talk about antidiarrheal support, talking about what do we need to do if patients are not getting better, making sure they're staying well hydrated. All of that is really important with that drug. With the HER2 selective TKI like zongertinib, for example, I think it's really important to stress, that we need to be monitoring liver enzymes closely as well. It does seem to have an improved tolerability profile compared to some of the other TKIs, but still important to keep that in mind. Both of these drugs do have an opportunity to present rash in patients that needs to be managed. So low threshold to work with your multidisciplinary colleagues in dermatology, to make sure that patient's rash is being adequately managed is also really important. What do you think, Millie?
Yeah, and I think, as we've gotten experienced with, the toxicity profiles of so many of the other TKIs that we're using in patients with other driver mutations, I think we're learning on in terms of trying to even potentially prevent the onset of some of these toxicities by giving medications prophylactically and preparing patients for what's to come. And we also know in the community it may not be as easy to be placing referrals to dermatology and for patients to be seen in a timely manner. And so how can we I think empower both patients and our community oncology colleagues to really feel comfortable with these drugs to try to prevent the onset of some of these toxicities, and then also just to sort of know exactly what to do when they do occur. I think, of course, we always go back to the package insert and look at the dose modification and interruption recommendations based upon the toxicity. I think it's always important to grade the toxicity and to really talk to our patients about the potential for dose interruption, discontinuation, whatever we need to do to get these patients to be able to stay on treatment. So finally, we're going to end on just discussing your key takeaway messages for oncologists who are managing patients with HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer, especially regarding biomarker testing and some of these emerging targeted therapies. And I know, Eric, you started off the conversation by talking about the importance of biomarker testing, but let's try to summarize sort of what the key takeaways for that are.
Yeah, of course. So, of course, I'm going to reiterate this again. I think it's really important to ensure that patients are getting access to broad, comprehensive genomic testing to make sure we identify this alteration. If we don't know this target exists, we don't have the opportunity to try and really use precision medicine, right? Lung cancer has become the poster child of precision medicine. If we don't know what we're targeting, patients don't have access to a drug that could have a very huge impact on their prognosis. So, yes, finding that target is huge. The other thing I'll say is you have to really understand all the different HER2 alterations, right? A mutation is not the same thing as an amplification or overexpression. And so making sure you understand the HER2 alteration that you're dealing with is imperative as well. Finally, I'll say that you want to stay informed of the clinical trials that are ongoing and the approvals in this space. The landscape is thankfully evolving quite rapidly for patients, which is exciting to see after many years. There's emerging HER2 selective TKIs that are finally more tolerable, giving more efficacy for patients. And so I think it's important to stay on top of all of these changes that are happening. Millie, what are your takeaways?
Yeah, I think the testing is really critical, and with HER2 in particular, because we know there's now testing being done through IHC for HER2 because we have now the tumor agnostic approval for trastuzumab deruxtecan for patients who are HER2 positive on IHC testing. Reminding ourselves that that's different from having a HER2 mutation that's noted on on an NGS report. And sort of learning and understanding those differences is obviously critical, and there's overlap. So we have patients who may have amplification, who may have IHC positivity, and maybe HER2 mutant, any combination of these things. But really, the focus of what we've been talking about today is patients who have that HER2 tyrosine kinase domain mutation. And a lot of these new drugs are really specifically for patients with those HER2 mutations, not necessarily amplification or HER2 positivity on IHC testing. And I think, sorry, oh, emerging target. And I think the other major takeaway is that I think we're moving in the direction of some of the other driver mutations, such as EGFR and ALK, with HER2. And I think that's quite exciting. And I do think that we are going to see drug approvals in probably in the upcoming months to years. And I think it's going to completely change our current treatment paradigm for these patients. And so I think stay tuned as we have more data, and that I think will lead to FDA approvals in this space. So, Eric, are there any ongoing or upcoming clinical trials that we should be aware of, particularly in the first line setting, as we talked about earlier, or potentially also some novel combinations?
There are. We're trying to move these more targeted therapies into the frontline setting. And so I'm excited to be able to say that there are some phase three studies to keep an eye out for. We have the BEAMIAN-Lung2 study, which is a phase three randomized controlled trial of Soquelitinib versus standard of care chemoimmunotherapy. So that may answer the question of does this, should this supplant, chemoimmunotherapy in the frontline setting for our patients? I'm hoping that answer is yes on the phase three study. We also have the SOHO-02 study, which is evaluating the efficacy and safety of Bay88 or Sevabertinib as a first-line therapy in patients with metastatic non-small cell lung cancer having that HER2 activating mutation, again, comparing it to standard of care chemoimmunotherapy. And then we also have the DESTINY-Lung04 study, which is really the first head-to-head trial in non-small cell lung cancer with a HER2 mutation, looking at trastuzumab deruxtecan. Should we be using this ADC in the frontline setting as compared to chemoimmunotherapy? So three ongoing large phase three studies that will hopefully bring targeted therapy to the frontline setting for our patients in this space.
This is great to hear that these studies hopefully will read out soon and will offer our patients greater options in the frontline setting. Thanks so much, Eric, for joining me in today's discussion about HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer.
Thanks for having me, Millie. It's always great to see you and take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description. To earn credit for participating in this podcast, please follow the instructions on how to receive credit information in the episode description.